ladies and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Scare Blast podcast. And now here's your host, Lisa Burton.
Hi everybody, welcome to Scare Blast podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Burton, and today we have comedian and songwriter, Miss Alisa Rosenthal.
Hi.
Alisa chose the movie, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is a great movie. It's a 1920s movie. Really old silent film. So let me ask you, Alisa, do you like scary movies in general? Would you reach for a scary movie?
I hate scary movies. I hate scary movies.
Okay.
I hate the sensation of being scared.
Uh-huh.
But like as I'm watching, as I'm watching them, I'm like, I hate this. But when it's done, I'm like, that was fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. And maybe I sleep with the lights on and then I'm fine. Like, I can't watch scary movies at night. I've heard of other people who have had this too.
Yeah.
Like, I can watch them during the day, but,
And this movie was okay for you?
I watched this movie at 8 a.m.
Okay.
But it was also, yes, it was, I maybe strategically picked it because I was hoping it would not scare me that much, and it did not scare me that much, so that was good. So, Roger Ebert calls this the first horror movie.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people have thought of this as, like, the first cult movie or art house movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, midnight movies, that's a whole other thing. Midnight movies weren't a thing until, like, the late 60s, early 70s.
Right.
So this is something that people got into in that capacity, like, later on. All right, listeners, welcome to the world of the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, 1920 German film, Das Kabinett des Dr. Caligari.
Do you speak German?
Not at all, but I wrote this down because I found it funny.
Great, I like
the Ein Filmspiel and Sex Acten.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, I'm going to say, it follows the six-act structure, which is right out of theatrical German expressionism.
Yeah.
So check that out. Okay, so, yeah, this is a silent movie, so there is no dialogue. Okay, I'll try to tell you the plot.
Yeah, to summarize it.
Yeah, but I find, like, and it's interesting, some of the research I did, like, a lot of the reviewers are like, well, the plot is secondary, it's really, like, the aesthetic and the style that's really exciting.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the plot, is we open on two inmates at an asylum, and we have, like, the crusty old man who's like, spirits drove my family away, drove me away from my family. And then we have our dashing hero, oh gosh, Francis. We have Francis.
Mm-hmm.
And he's telling a story about his friend Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think this is also kind of like an old school structure of, like, I'm telling you a story about my friend. And it's interesting because as I was watching this, it was a lot of things that are, like, very, how can we make this immediate? How can we make it, like, because that's what's scary. It's scary when it feels like it could be about me.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the story about Alan. Francis and Alan go to the fair.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what it's called, like the Nacht Market or something like
yeah.
that. And there's a creepy eccentric who has a sleepwalker that he wants to show at the fair,
mm-hmm.
otherwise known as a somnambulist,
yes.
Which I googled immediately and means sleepwalker.
Yeah.
It's like way to go old school cue cards that you call him by his like very formal name.
Yes. Yeah.
So German, every step of the way.
Totally.
Okay, so basically we have this, the note I took about Dr. Caligari is, he is an old eccentric with the demon comb over.
Yes! and it's like straight back.
Yeah,
right.
Head. Yeah. His makeup, I mean, like the whole makeup is a makeup artist's dream.
Yeah.
His makeup in particular, Dr. Caligari, who is the showman who has this somnambulist,
yep.
Has like very creepy white face paint with kind of like, his nose is kind of blacked out and there's
yeah.
like smudging over his lips. And it changes from shot to shot. It's uh-huh. really eerie.
I
found the makeup actually like pretty creepy.
Well, played by Werner Krauss. And mm-hmm. while we're talking about makeup, I know mm-hmm. this is still the summation of the
yeah.
movie, but that actor mm-hmm. it came in and changed his makeup for this role.
Oh.
He came in and
real Heath Ledger playing the Joker here.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
No, he did. He came in and he it was supposed to be much more toned down,
mm-hmm.
but he thought that the makeup should match the set. And since
cool.
all of the shadows and everything are painted onto the set,
yeah.
he changed his makeup to be deep. And then all the other cast members changed their makeup to
cool.
match. Yeah.
It's
so
really theatrical. Yeah.
It's very
and,
cool.
And that's awesome. And I should point out that, so since this is 1920, since we're in Germany, the German Expressionist movement is blowing up. We're
uh-huh.
in like the heyday of German Expressionism,
yeah.
which means that a lot of the art coming out of the time is processing World War I. Okay, but, so listeners, well, visualize stark angles, interesting lighting, like,
it's cool,
yeah. So, like, everything Tim Burton is doing, like, that's what this looks like in 1920. So it's very, very visually appealing. Okay, we have this showman who has this, he's like, I'm going to show you the sleepwalker. He sleeps for, he's been asleep for 23 years, but I'm going to wake him up.
Yep.
And he wakes up. And he's a bit of a soothsayer.
Mm-hmm.
So our protagonist, Francis, his best friend, Alan, who's like real attractive. Like,
yeah.
Like a little too attractive for this movie.
And a little boyish.
A little boyish. Really runs cute. Up and is like, tell me, when will I die?
Yeah.
When will I die? And Cesar, the sleepwalker, says by dawn.
I would actually prefer you always call him the somnambulist.
So. The somnambulist.
Okay.
It's so hard for me to pronounce. The somnambulist says by dawn. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, he dies by dawn.
Mm-hmm.
So we start seeing, like, reoccurring murder pattern. Oh, and then there's a love interest. There's always a young lover.
Yeah.
Finally a woman in the film. This town run by men.
Yeah. She's got a very small part.
Exactly, yeah. But both Francis and Alan are in love with her, and they have this, like, very... congenial, like, well, whoever she loves, who it's gonna be.
I know. My boyfriend Tim and I were sitting here, and I was like, that's the most mature.
Right. And like, we will stay friends.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll let her decide.
Yeah, and according to my notes, by Alan, so Francis gets the girl. So Alan does get murdered by a sharp object.
Mm-hmm.
The girl, who I looked up, her name is Jane. Gets, like, kind of abducted at some point by the somnambulist.
Mm-hmm.
They find someone who they're pretty sure is the murderer, but it turns out it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of creepy asides of Dr. Caligari in his tiny house, a precursor to the tiny house. where he keeps Cesare, his, like, very dashing, sleepwalking, like, automaton. He's not a robot, but he, like, kind of feels like
somnambulist.
Somnambulist, thank you. then it, like, takes a real bizarre turn where we get a big flashback into the life of Dr. Caligari, and...
Francis goes to the insane asylum.
Yeah.
And is like, I'm looking for Caligari.
Because Caligari runs in there.
Caligari
runs into an insane asylum.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
How did he get... Yeah, we gotta find him. And they're like, we don't know a Caligari.
Mm-hmm.
They start looking through all these records, and they find Caligari's journal. What luck.
Yeah.
And so then we have this epic flashback of Caligari meeting Cesar, like, falling in love, basically. I forget what else happens in that flashback.
So he, So what I remember is that, or what I have here is that this is where he finds out, where they're, like, tearing through books. They're reading that Caligari mm-hmm. is this Italian man from 1783.
Oh, that's right.
And so they're like, oh, Caligari is this Italian man who has this somnambulist. How can he live so long?
Right.
What's going on? Blah, 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 blah. And then finally, the asylum director comes in
mm-hmm.
and lo and behold, the asylum director is Caligari.
That's right. That was legitimately shocking.
Yeah.
Legitimately shocking.
So that is, and that's still in the story portion of this. Yeah. That was legit shocking. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So so keep going.
Okay. So then everyone is sure that Cesar, the somnambulist, is the murderer.
Yes.
They're all, like, running around trying to find him.
Yeah.
They do. He dies or is catatonic. Mm-hmm. It was a little unclear to me.
Yeah. He's just, like, asleep again or something.
Yeah. And then we end...
in a field.
Oh, and then, well, and Caligari sees Cesare, what he thinks is dead, and goes crazy.
Yeah.
When Caligari is the... director of the asylum, like, we have that information. He goes crazy, and we have this image of the director of the asylum getting institutionalized.
Yeah.
Which is, like, pretty powerful.
Yep.
But then it turns out that's not real, or that's...
It all spins on its head again, and then we come back to the beginning.
We're back in the field. Yeah, we're back in, like, the courtyard. We see all the crazy people wandering around. We see the girl, Jane, who's been, like, driven to madness by her experience. She thinks she's a queen.
Yeah.
We see cameo by Charles Darwin lookalike.
Yeah.
Who's just, like, counting or something like
totally,
that.
Totally. That guy was crazy.
Right? Like,
he was so crazy.
Literally just a shot of someone looking crazy with, like, crazy beard, crazy hair.
And it's all crazy people, which is so, this film is so influential in so many ways.
And again, I think about, like, what are the tricks you have in 1920 to make people feel scared? Because I think about it in theater a lot. I think it's really hard to make scary theater.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to make it feel real, and you have to make it feel like that could be me. So I think there's something really freaky about seeing images of, like, people being crazy or, like, what you think your brain could do. Okay. So we end where we began. Yeah. Francis talking to this older inmate. And, yeah, it's just kind of a, like... And that's how I got here. Oh, no, no. He's like, I'm not the crazy one. Caligari's the crazy one. And they're all like, who's Caligari?
Yeah. Who's Caligari?
Yeah.
And then he maintains, Francis keeps maintaining to this old man. He's like, Caligari is the asylum director.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, now in real life.
Right.
Caligari, or the man, the actor.
Right, but he doesn't have his, like, freaky face paint.
Yeah, he
has his glasses, which is creepy. The same glasses.
But he's, like, a normal dude, but he's walking around the grounds and is totally normal. And then they take Francis, who starts to freak out at him.
That's, like,
really
freak out.
Like a crazy person.
Yeah.
They take him and put him in a straitjacket.
Right. Run end credits. Woo! Cue the Debussy. It's perfect.
Seriously, this was so good.
It's great.
It's well put together. Mm-hmm. It's well executed. The end of it, the twist is like reminiscent of good M. Night Shyamalan.
Totally.
Like, it's very good. It's very well done.
Yeah.
And the, man, this film is played in art museums. Mm-hmm. This film is played in, like you were saying, Elisa, it's played in film classes.
Yeah.
Like, this is one that people learn as a baseline for, like, this expressionistic film.
Because you didn't have a lot at that time that was weird. People weren't making weird movies. They were still trying to figure out how to make good movies.
Exactly.
How to tell a story.
Yeah. So, here we are at trivia questions. All right, how many do you have?
I have three.
I have five.
Okay, great.
But we will see. So I'll go first, and then we'll sandwich. We'll go back and forth.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
So do I answer after you tell me?
Yes.
Okay,
here we go. Number one. Mm-hmm. What did they take out of this film in an effort to make it, quote-unquote, timeless?
Maybe a reference to World War One.
Okay, that's a good guess.
That's my guess.
Okay. The answer is any mention of phones, telegraphs, or electric light.
That's so cool!
Isn't it so cool?
That gave me chills!
And when you look back on it, you're like, oh yeah, they never answer the phone. They never... I thought it was such a cool tidbit.
That's really cool.
Yeah, they took out phones, telegraphs, or electric light.
That's really cool. Okay. Conrad Veidt, who played the somnambulist, Cesar, had a hugely illustrious film career with over 100 films. What's his best-known American film? And I can give you the year if that'll help you.
I'm just going to guess. I don't need the year. I'm going to guess Frankenstein. Is that correct?
No.
Great. Give me the year.
1942.
Ooh.
And I can give you a second-tier hint also on this.
Yep.
Probably the biggest film to come out of the 40s.
Oh my gosh. Why wouldn't I know it?
Because it's really hard.
Yeah, that sounds hard. Gone with the Wind.
Okay, close. Casablanca.
Yeah! Mm-hmm. Heyo, of course.
So he was the German Major Heinrich Strasser.
Ooh!
Who, spoiler alert, Humphrey Bogart shoots at the very end.
Mm.
Fun fact about Conrad Veidt, because I did a little reading on him. If any of your questions have to do with him, I can stop. Okay. So, he like blew up with Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah.
He made another film called The Man Who Laughed, I want to say.
Okay.
He started to become really big in Germany.
Cool.
He marries a Jewish woman.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the late 20s, early 30s in Germany. Yeah. Not a great time to be Jewish or married to someone who's Jewish.
Yeah.
They go to Britain.
Mm-hmm.
He instantly starts donating as much money as he can to Britain and to the U.S. to get involved to fight the Nazis.
Yeah.
Then they move to Hollywood. He knew he was going to get typecast as a Nazi because he's a tall, good-looking German guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he agreed to play Nazis, but only if they were portrayed as villains.
Cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yes.
That was written into his contract.
It really is. And this film actually has a lot to do with that movement. And we will, I think I wrote a question or two about that. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I think my next one does.
So that's that one.
Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
This is German Expressionist. Why did it come about, and or what does this expression represent? Did you read any about, like, specifically what this expression?
So my knowledge of German Expressionism is, so this is coming out of coping with World War I.
Yeah.
A lot of coping with feeling like you don't have power with your government.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this a lot in this movie, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. We have an authoritarian figure that's crazy that, like, the townspeople don't, like, actively choose to not rebel against.
Yes.
So.
100%.
That's ding, 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 yeah, yeah. Ding. Yeah. I read up on that because that was, I couldn't look
away.
It is
really interesting, because, and this also comes at a time that was about authority.
Mm-hmm.
It was about feeling helpless mm-hmm. to your authority.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost a call, and this sounded terrible while I was reading it, but it really resonates with this film, mm-hmm. which is Germany is anticipating this very tyrannical leader.
Absolutely.
So Germany, mm-hmm. like, knows that this is coming somehow.
Yeah.
And this film also reflects that, which is, like, here we have someone who we know is about to be a leader, which is Dr. Caligari, as mm-hmm. the asylum director,
mm-hmm.
but in his spare time is also tyrannical and terrible. Is also, like, this terrible person who latent in this film is the director of the somnambulist who kills people.
Right.
Which is reflective of the rest of the government who are the arm of the law to be there and kill everyone. Like, that mm-hmm. is the Nazi Party, which is highly anticipated at this time, even in 1920, just following World War One. This mm-hmm. was, like, a very, and again, this goes with that idea that when this film was released, it was the criticism was varied, because the mm-hmm. criticism that it was getting that was against the film was mm-hmm. specifically with regard to the politics at the time.
Yeah.
And the people that were really for this film were mm-hmm. specifically for the expressionistic nature of it.
Right.
And
some of them wanted it to go farther.
Yes.
Like, they wanted it to not be a fantasy that Caligari goes crazy.
Right.
They, and actually, I found that image really moving.
Yeah.
I think I said that already, that, like, watching your authoritarian figure get locked up. Yeah. But then when it was kind of like, but that was in his head, maybe.
Yeah. No, but it's all up for interp, right?
Yeah.
So you want it to go a step further and just have an opinion.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was mm-hmm. really good. Yeah.
So,
anyway, go
on. I wrote down a quote because it stayed with me specifically about this.
Uh-huh.
So there was a book written from Caligari. The book is called From Caligari to Hitler.
Uh-huh.
By Siegfried Krakauer.
Yeah.
And this
heard
is,
of it?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of abbreviated, but the film reflects a subconscious need in German society for a tyrant, and is an example of Germany's obedience to authority and unwillingness to rebel against deranged authority, a premonition of the rise of Hitler.
So interesting.
Which is really interesting. And because I was thinking about
1920, people.
Right.
Like, this was
not that long ago.
Yeah, and not only that, but this was, like, you know, it was in anticipation of.
Right.
It wasn't even, like, immediately while he was, it wasn't mm-hmm. like while he was in power. It was just before.
Right. And I think about, because I was thinking about, like, how is this movie relevant to today? Because this movie did feel relevant to me.
Totally.
I mean, I think the psychological stuff does feel very timeless. The emission of phones feel very timeless. but also, like, I have this fear, too, and, like, I don't know, I'm really fascinated by the 60s and, like, what Chicago was like in the 60s and stuff like that. Like, how we had, like, people were actively in big groups, like, rebelling against authority.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't happened in a while.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that has to do with, like, people are generally okay.
Yeah.
We've got the internet. People are kind of making some money now. Totally. Like, there's generally, again, a really broad generalization, generally we're okay.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me where it's like, oh, if like a figure that was deranged, as this quote says, would we rebel? or like, has that already happened and we haven't? You know, like, that's what kind of felt really relevant to me.
Totally.
How do you know when your authoritarian figure is really out there?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That's what kind of got me new.
It was really this movie's deep. Yeah.
All right. Here's a question for you.
Okay.
Okay. The character of Dr. Caligari was the inspiration for what 90s Hollywood supervillain?
I think I know this because I think I read it, but in Periphery. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The Penguin.
You got it.
Ha-ha!
Penguin in Batman Returns.
Yes!
Because that's what we talk about Tim Burton a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's interesting because you look at how Dr. Caligari with his, like, slick back hair.
Yes. He looks like the Penguin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's got this, like, yeah, and his slick back hair, and then he's got, like, lines on his head,
right,
underneath his hair. Like, it's very mysterious. Yeah. Where you're like, how the fuck did his hair?
Right.
Doesn't matter. He's scary.
Right.
Like, he really had, and those deep, like, oh, you were saying, those big black, like, marks under his eyes. Very theatrical. Yeah.
Right.
It was
follow-up, who was Cesar, the somnambulist, the model for?
Edward
Scissorhands. Yeah, there,
which you mentioned earlier.
Right, I mentioned earlier.
So it's like I did see.
Right, right.
Tim Burton, man.
Like, and then,
again, like, when you watch this film, if you are a Tim Burton fan, there's no reason
you'll
not
see
to
everything.
See this film.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You really should see this film. If you're like, I wish Tim Burton would come out with another movie so that I could watch more Tim. Nope. All you have to do is watch Dr. Caligari, like the cabinet of Dr. Caligari. All right, here we go. According to Caligari, how many years has Cesare been asleep?
23.
Very good! Ding, 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 ding!
I remember thinking that was funny. Like,
yes!
You were weirdly...
It was so specific.
Right. Also, he don't look 23. I'm sorry.
No, he don't look 23. But also, it's like, well, then maybe he went to sleep when he was 13?
Yeah,
like,
right?
Who knows?
Yeah, that's possible.
And then you're like, but...
Because that fact did stay with me. I was like, has he been asleep his whole life? What does he do? When does he pee? I don't know.
Yes, and that idea of him, of just the way we did not at all understand sleepwalking.
Right.
What that meant, or being narcoleptic, or
right.
being, and how that affects your actual life.
Right.
So, and also, I mean, to that same end, how effective the internet has been in connecting us all with the understanding of humanity.
Yeah.
And how we all just understand some of that stuff a little better because we have it at our fingertips.
Right.
So, like, you were just able to Google somnambulist.
Right.
Like, that it's like, what is that? Oh, I know what it is. It's a sleepwalker.
Right.
From 1920, which means something else.
Right. Probably a very terrifying, like...
Yeah.
Who knows, that could have been tabloid fodder, you know, like, that
Absolutely.
Could have been something where it's, like, a thing that happens that I don't have, you know, that fits in perfectly thematically, where it's, like, a thing that happens to my body that I don't have control over. What if I am a sleepwalker?
Yeah, you know? That is, yeah. And it's all, like, gosh, that's really interesting, just that early 1900s fear-mongering.
Right,
it's just
right.
You, stuff you don't understand. I also had a lot of thoughts, because I, you know, am listening to these awful podcasts about crime, and true crime, and also historical crime, which also has a lot to do with asylums from the early 1900s, because it wasn't until 1936 that we had the lobotomy introduced.
Right.
And really, we only had the lobotomy from, like, 1936 to 1952, I think.
Right.
I mean, we didn't have a lobotomy, that lobotomy idea for very long.
Right.
But, like, how long that fear has happened.
Yeah.
Not where it's, like, this is something we don't understand. It's
right.
something that, like, you, and we still don't understand the brain fully.
Right.
Like, so watching this movie, again, being a psychological horror, is so relevant still, because it's just like, what is my brain doing?
Right,
like,
right.
What, am I a somnambulist?
Right.
Like, again, like, even today,
yeah.
it's just like, what am I doing in my sleep?
Right.
What is the person I'm sleeping next to doing
right.
in our sleep?
Like, yeah,
you
yeah.
trust someone so much
right.
when you sleep.
Are you on my last one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wait.
Or is it your turn? No.
Mine was 23 years.
Yeah.
It's your turn, but
oh,
I still
you
have
went.
Two more questions.
Sure. How about you do yours? I'll do mine, you do yours.
Right, here we go.
Yeah.
What year is Italian Caligari supposed to have toured fairs? And I mentioned this earlier
yeah.
in the podcast.
I think I remember. I think I wrote it down, actually.
You ready? 1783.
Oh,
no! 10 years. Oh. Off. Okay, your turn.
Okay. All right. What is the film's Rotten Tomatoes rating? What percent?
Out of 100? I actually did not look at this because Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know why. I think I just guys, listeners. People love that Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I just cannot get right. into the name Rotten Tomatoes.
I agree with you.
Because mm-hmm. it's so negative right. that I'm like, it doesn't matter what rating it has. Right. It's a negative rating to me.
I just like reviews to read reviews.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I love reading reviews. Right. Okay. 63% because that seems to be every fucking review I've
read. 100%.
What?
It is a 100% positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
It's in a very elite category. I thought about it too, and I was like, I would agree with that. Like,
yeah,
I
too.
Think there is not a lot to put under 50%, or
no.
however Rotten Tomatoes works with this movie. Like,
watch this.
Yeah,
film.
Right.
Watch.
And
this
that means
film.
That the critics of the time and the critics of today universally agree that there is enough good stuff in it. Isn't that interesting?
You have to see
yeah,
this movie.
I know.
Everybody, watch this.
Also, surprise! We work for whatever production, like distribution
for,
studio.
Thank you, Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. You put in our amount of
yeah.
time.
I usually don't care about Rotten Tomatoes, but I just thought, like, I've
yeah.
never seen something with 100% positive rating.
Me neither.
Rotten
yeah,
Tomatoes.
That's why I was like 63%, because
right.
that seems to be every goddamn rating
right.
on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, last question.
Mm-hmm.
Where did writer Hans Janowitz get the idea for this film? Did you read this?
Yeah, but can I access it in my head?
Mm-hmm. Do you remember where he got the idea for this film?
He was...
And this is an interesting anecdote.
Yeah. I want to say he feigned mental illness to get out of the war. Or this might be the other guy.
This is the other guy.
Okay, so here's the tale of the other guy.
Okay.
The other guy...
Oops,
sorry. Because it was written by two guys.
Uh-huh.
One of them feigned mental illness to get out of the war.
Carl Mayer.
Yeah. And because of it, they put him in all this psychiatric study and stuff.
Oh, cool.
So that started, like, kind of messing with him.
Yeah.
So that was one of the foundations
yeah.
for one of the elements of the story.
Totally.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
the other element of the
mm-hmm.
story is, so that was Carl Mayer.
Mm-hmm.
This, and it was written by two guys, Carl Mayer and Hans Janowitz.
Mm-hmm.
Hans Janowitz had gone to the fair. He saw a man lurking in the shadows, and then later on that day, it was reported that a girl had been brutally murdered, and when he went to the girl's funeral, which at the time was not uncommon,
right.
but like a bunch of townspeople
right.
had gone to the
It's like the thing to go do.
Right?
Yeah.
You just like go to a funeral. Went to the funeral, and the man lurking in the shadows was at the funeral. So he remembered getting like a bad feeling about that guy.
Oh my god.
And so that was... one of the inspirations.
That's German
this.
Expressionism in a nutshell.
Absolutely.
In a nutshell.
Just this fear of like the
yeah.
shadows and the dark and the unknown
right.
and the bizarre.
Interesting.
Carnies, man.
There's some creepy stuff in this.
Yeah.
I will give you that 1920.
This was such a great movie.
Great,
good,
yeah.
Good choice, Elisa.
Thank you. I'm glad that this kind of gave me the like excuse to watch it because it's kind of hard to, like, you know, sit alone and watch a silent movie.
Yeah.
You know, on a Friday morning, but
right.
it worked out great, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you're interested in German Expressionism or Tim Burton, like, it's a really good place to start.
Totally.
See what they were doing then.
Hey, if we are in October, where can we find you?
You can find me at the Uptown Underground, running my solo show, The Plucky Rosenthal Hour.
Heyo.
Tuesdays at 7 p.m. through October 13th.
Yeah.
And that is, as you might have been able to tell from this chat, I am very drawn to the 1920s and the 1930s, so I do recreation vaudeville.
Cool.
So keeping, like, ukulele music alive and routines and dances that you would have seen from that time period.
So cool.
More information at alisarosenthal.com or my vaudeville character, pluckyrosenthal.com.
And say it again, Alisa, A-L-I-S-A.
Yes. A-L-I-S-A.
Great.
A singular Lisa.
No, I'm a singular Lisa.
No, I'm a singular
cool.
Lisa.
Cool. cool.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This
yeah.
is super fun.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast. I never thought I would like watching a scary movie as much as I do.